then way, way down the ladder of all of that is us. And so the higher you go, the more floaty it gets. The more fluid. And down here, it's very dense and compressed. So everything has an existence that is got an apparency of rigidity and stuckness. And at the higher levels, it's all fluid. It would be, the way they describe it sometimes, is in the really high realms, say the Elohim realm, you know, they just start intending something, and it starts to be. It's like creation from thought. Now, in this realm, occasionally some of us have an experience where we've been able to do that, create something. Like, I remember some long time ago, I first became aware of this when I would be singing a song and then the radio would come on, and occasionally the same song that I was humming to myself would be playing. Or I was even with my friend Jillian, and I would be humming a song to myself, and she would start singing it out loud. And I said, how can this work? How does this work that this can happen? Sometimes you're thinking a word, and they say the word on the radio. It's like there's something going on that is fluid, that there's an interface between the fluidness of the other realm and the fixedness of this realm, and that we have the potential to access that fluidness, in which case, when we want something to happen in this realm, you have the ability to start it happening by what looks like magic, okay? Because it's not being created in this realm. It's being created somewhere else. Now, according to my book, here's a big piece of magic that the book talks about. The pyramids in Egypt were created by Edgar Cayce in one of his previous lifetimes, but he didn't really create them. He was working with his group Soul, and they created them by levitation. So they have the ability to interface in this realm and do things that would be against the laws of physics in this realm. The problem is they, apparently in different times in history, they did a lot more of that, and they came to the conclusion that it was not beneficial to do miracles. Because in general, particularly miracles that were done in front of lots of people, in general, miracles don't cause people to grow. They cause them to give up their power and become followers of whoever's doing the miracle. So even negative beings can do miracles. Miracles being something in this realm which is out of the laws of this realm, out of the laws of science and physics, something that transcends that. So if miracles were the criteria to follow something, it would be very easy to get fooled and follow the wrong thing. Now, what does it mean? What's the danger of following the wrong thing? Well, if you think life is just a physical body in a realm, then it doesn't matter, because whatever you do down here, when it's done, it's done. But if you have a spirit form or a soul that continues when you die and then gets reborn, and then continues and gets reborn and continues, then what they say is, they meaning these invisible friends, is that when you are connected to the energy of something while you're alive, then when you die, you're still connected to the energy of it. So that's why in this period of time, there's this transformation going on that one has to be very careful what one connects their energy to, because those of you who have studied the material that I put out know that we're in what they call, what I call, a dimensional shift at the end of a cycle. And there's something going on in this period that has never happened before in history, and that if you know about it, it can be an impetus to make better decisions in your life, to understand the significance of what you're affiliating yourself with in the physical. Because the way it's described is that the Earth is lifting its vibration, where the paradigm is going to change from power to compassion, or from third chakra to fourth chakra, and that in order to lift with this new vibration of the Earth, your own heart has to be open, which means in your life, you have to be tapped into the ability to extend compassion, the ability to see your neighbor as yourself, the ability to see and perceive oneness. You can't be compassionate out of fear. In other words, you can't say, God, I want to graduate to this new earth, and I'm afraid I won't, so I better be a nice guy. That's not compassion. That's being a nice guy. This is an actual quality that you have to embrace. And if it's something that you say, geez, I would like to embrace that quality, then part of these calls is explaining and giving keys how to embrace that. It's also giving you materials that can help you embrace that. It's also giving you wisdom from these friendly guys in other realms on how to embrace that. And it's also giving a community. If you start to investigate the work I'm doing outside of this call, you'll find that there's a community being built around this work that I'm not, it's happening as a result of the work. It's not happening because I want a community or I want this to happen, but I do see the value of it, because I see that when somebody says, I want to embrace these qualities, oftentimes, within the framework of your own life, there's no one around you that is able to embrace that quality with you. And so you keep trying and there's no feedback. It's a lot easier when you have a group of people that have similar goals, similar intentions, because to be loving, you need to be loving with people. And although you should love everybody, and you can love everybody, you can't involve yourself with everybody. You can't have love come back. Love should come back so that you feel loved as well as loving. And many people are not even up to considering that. And they're in their own reality, and particularly now with the state of the world falling apart, they're in their fear, they're in their anxiety. And if you're going to like help somebody that's in fear and anxiety and love them, you've got to be pretty strong, because everyone knows how it feels to be pulled into somebody else's reality and say, they're just dumping on me. And I'm not feeling loving. I know that they were out of balance and I wanted to help them, but you reached to help them in some way. And you weren't strong enough in yourself to hold against their fear. So they'll pull you into their fear. And then you have to almost reject them, which is almost worse than even trying to involve yourself. So we're creating a community of people that have the same ideal, and that are receptive to compassion, and they're also extending it, because when people are compassionate with each other, it allows you to heal your own darkness and your own fear. You can't be in this realm without having darkness and fear. You can't. It's part of being in this realm. And let me just say, I shouldn't say you can't. I'm sure there's people that would say that they don't have that, and they've transcended it, and that I honor that. But most of us, that's not the case. Most of us have this thing. What's going to happen? The world's falling apart. Where's the money going to come from? How am I going to eat? And those are real. You have to figure it out. And when you have a group of people all feeling that are not compassionate, guess what? They're not turning to each other to help the problem. You know what? It feels a lot more secure if you got people around you that says, hey, things are falling apart, but we're going to make it. We're going to look towards each other. Let's move. Let's go to a safer area. Let's move to a farm. Let's do this. Let's, you know. But when you're all alone and you don't have that, it's really hard. So if you're going to have these qualities, you need to find people to share them with that have the same ideals, and then you start transforming your fear. Because the compassion itself is an energy that brings balance to yourself, brings security, and it brings being able to count on other people. How many people can you really count on in your life? How many? And if you don't have any that you can count on as true deep friends that are there for you, then it's time to start visioning yourself creating that. And that's part of this work we're doing. We're creating an opportunity for people to create that. And it's not anything that can be forced. It has to come from spontaneous kind of combustion inside yourself and around another person. But when we also have these invisible friends, and it's the first time I've called them invisible friends, but you know what? If you talk about them in the way they've been referred to it historically, it's intimidating. People are intimidated, and it's understandable that they're intimidated because they're powerful, and power scares people. So they say, oh, my God. They could do this to me. They don't really do that. The power is the lesser quality than their compassion. But you know what? You can't believe me. This is why it's so important to study the material that I put out. Because you have to read their words and come to the conclusion that they can be trusted. Because when you have invisible friends and you can't see them, how do you know what their intent is? How do you know? You have to test it for yourself. Because if you decide that they are trustworthy, you can invite them into your space. Because they won't come into your space unless you invite them. And you won't invite them unless you're pretty darn sure you can trust them. So one aspect of this work is creating a bridge so that you can hear their words, you can hear the description of how it feels when they connect with you, and you're open to ask for them. And many people who have been checking into this line over a period of time and checking into our other conference calls and et cetera, have had some experience like this. Now, some people have had it just from reading Message a Day. I've gotten two things. One person said, you know what, I got a message in my dreams last night, and I asked them to take my headache away, the headache went away. Now, that's not enough to know you got a positive source, but at least you can work with it. You always have to test any kind of interaction with invisible energies. You have to keep testing it. I have to keep testing it. Even though I'm in the middle of the experience of it, I never assume that I can believe every word without going through my own scrutiny and discernment. Because a voice speaks to you, it could be a negative source. And the material covers how to identify a negative source and gives keys to helping to make sure you don't get fooled. Because, like I said, if whatever energy you attach yourself to is, as far as I can tell, is going to be an energy that you're going to connect with after you're dead and in future lifetimes, potentially. So when you're talking about invisible energies, you have to be really, really careful, because you don't have the cues of looking in someone's eyes, listening to the inflections of their voice, and say, okay, they're cool. You don't have those cues. So you have to maybe observe them over a longer period of time. Now, I did a lot of research and cross-referencing as I was writing the book and as I was having my own experience. And, of course, one of the great sources that I referenced was the Edgar Cayce readings. And there's a book, I don't even think it's in print now. It's called The Politics of Hope. And there was the premise that when I first started studying David Wilcock, that Edgar Cayce and David Wilcock had the same source. And this source identified itself as a group soul that was made up of graduates of this realm. In other words, beings that had gotten off the wheel of reincarnation. And one of their choices was to join this group soul, which was a huge conglomerate, and they called themselves the Social Memory Complex. And this is the real key about how the universe evolves. Much like your cells come to the top and your cells are always replacing themselves, over long periods of time, humans come to the top, and then new, I don't know exactly how this works, but, you know, they graduate to the top and release, and now they're pure energy, and they're working to help those of us who are still stuck here. So, you know, the premise that was coming through the Wilcock readings was that the same source that's speaking through David Wilcock was speaking through Edgar Cayce, as well as this woman, Carla Ruckert, the Ra group. So you would expect, if it was the same source, and keeping in mind, a group soul's got millions of individual souls, so when you say the same source, although it comes from that group soul, they have sub-councils, they would assign one group to a certain guy, you wouldn't expect necessarily that all millions and millions are all forming one voice for one person to talk through. Probably overkill. They may all group together as one energy for some major project. Like, I don't know what that would be, but let's say they're moving souls from one planet to another. Maybe it takes a huge amount of them to do that. They say they can do that. But nonetheless, you would expect to find some kind of resonance. And in understanding the Ra group, it would be because they were graduates of this realm, they would have a lot of wisdom of this realm. And they also would have some sense of a warrior spirit, to want to help this realm. But they also have a sense of great patience, because it's very difficult to assist the realm, according to them. And we go through gross repeating cycles. Now, a gross repeating cycle, according to them, would mean that we had lifetimes on other planets, and maybe even in other places in the galaxy, and maybe even in other places in the universe, and that there's this third density realm that has quite a large expanse of populations in it, and that planets end up blowing up, and then when it blows up, the population has to get moved to another planet, the soul aspect of the population, and then that one blows up. Now, you know, this blowing up thing might take hundreds of thousands of years or a million years, it doesn't matter, but they're responsible, or they assume the responsibility to help these populations continue to evolve, and they say they have the ability to move soul matrices from one planet to another. Specifically in Carla Ruggett's material, they moved souls from Mars and Maldek to Earth. Maldek was the planet that exploded and became the asteroids, and now they're hoping very much that Earth is not going to do that. We all know that that's one of the possibility vortices that exist, and that there's negative stuff that would like to create that to actually happen. And so, in any case, here is the Ra. I'm going to compare the Ra group talking through Edgar Cayce and the Ra group, or one of the Ra group. It seems like it's an individual of the Ra group. It's been our understanding that Ramtha, who spoke through J.Z. Knight, she's one of the most famous of all channels right now. In one of our readings, it came up that Ramtha was actually also part of the Ra group. And, of course, David Wilcock is part of the Ra group. And maybe I'll read a couple things from him, although I didn't bring that book out. I assume that everyone listening would have read it. But to know and to not do becomes sin. To have or to know and not to do, nor make practical, nor make active, become stumbling blocks. He who uses knowledge for his own personal aggrandizement does so to his own undoing. And I think this is a quote, it's got quote, maybe this is from the Bible. In the day you eat or use knowledge for thy own aggrandizement, you shall die. Well, I think one of the reasons it's so hard to get the kind of work I'm doing out into the middle of the world is because if you really adopt it, there's a huge responsibility attached to it. Because now once you know this is real, then it engenders some kind of action on your part. Because you're responsible for understanding that you know people who you could change the path of their future just by helping them to be loving. And if you don't do anything, you feel guilty. And, I mean, I think that's my problem, because I said, I'm not doing this because I need to do it to have people listen to me. I'm doing it because I know it's real at this point. I've just watched too many things, too much integration of stuff. Here's another one. Until you are willing to lose thyself in service, you may not indeed know that peace which he had promised to all. Now, of course, Edgar Cayce was a Christian. He was a fundamentalist when he was young. And all through his channelings, he used what I call the Christ template. And I see that Jesus was a template for these higher forces, and that they worked rather diligently to create a circumstance where someone could come from higher realms and anchor something in this realm. They made all the predictions in the Old Testament, and they created the Essene area where he was born out of. And, you know, I studied this. I'm not going to explain it all on this call, but there was quite a long-term plan to bring someone down here that people would recognize. You see, if you bring someone down here, there needs to be a way to recognize them, or else they won't get attention. Those of you who have studied the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, know that through Edgar Cayce, they made the prediction that Cayce would return in 1998, live in Virginia Beach, and maybe a liberator of the world. And then when David Wilcock started to get messages, his voice told him to go to Virginia Beach in November of 1997. And it was at that point that he did go to Virginia Beach and found out he was the spitting image of Edgar Cayce. And then he asked his voice, he said, why do I look like Edgar Cayce? And they said, you were Edgar Cayce. And if you study Cayce, you'll see the parallels. But this lifetime, if you're going to do your highest purpose, you're not going to do what Cayce did. You're not going to do health readings and past life readings. You're going to be a public figure. I don't have the quote in front of me, a public figure to bring the truth of this dimensional shift to people. And of course, that's exactly what David's doing. He's got videos on YouTube that have had 100,000 hits, and he's staying in the middle of it, and he keeps going, and he's just fulfilling exactly the role that his voice said that he should. But then we also go back to the Cayce prediction, where they said he'll return in 1998 and may be a liberator of the world. Well, that's a big one, right? Well, a lot of people now that are not finding answers. And if you look at this material and you look at the body that we're of information and understanding and connection we're putting out, it is liberating people. And I'm doing this because I wrote that book about David. And then, of course, I had all my own experiences. But without that first step of writing the book, I give David the credit. Not that he did it out of his conscious mind, but just by putting his stuff out into the world and me finding his website caused a whole chain of events for me. And, you know, because I put my stuff out into the world, there's a gentleman in another state that read my book, Questions and Answers with the Elohim, and his girlfriend started channeling the Elohim immediately thereafter, and he put a website up and has got the channelings up. And so, you see, there is a phenomena going on right now of things going from one place to another at a very grassroots level. And the hope is that this phenomena at a grassroots level can become large enough to change what we could call the collective. And then it starts spreading as this is the way it is. This is what's happened in history. You had something happen very small, but it was real. It was small, but it was real. And because it's real, it doesn't go away. It changes everyone that touches it. And those people end up being a change that changes, you know, down the line in a big... the word that came to my mind is like multi-level marketing, where 12 get 12, get 12, get 12, and before you know it, you have millions. And the collective consciousness shifts. And of course, there's not just me doing this. There's like little enclaves of people who are having these experiences that I never met, they never met me, and they're doing it in their own way. But it's really the same thing from the higher levels. What we're doing, and sometimes people say, well, Wynn, what is your message? What is your message? You know, I can talk and talk and talk, but this is not my message. The message is that we have an opportunity to to expand each of us into what we could call interdimensional experience in this realm. We can feel the connections with other dimensions and with each other, not in emotions, not in intellect, but in essence, soul essence. And that is what actually is the desired result, to make those connections. And if there's a message, it says, here's the time to make them. This is possible now. It's more possible now than it's been in other lifetimes. And why is that? Why is it more possible now than in other lifetimes? Because when we're dealing, we have this peak of energy, this 75,000-year cycle. And this peak of energy, which the book referred to as toroid wave radiation, religions refer to it as prana, Holy Spirit, whatever, and people refer to it as vibes, this energy is at a peak. And that energy connects us. The higher that energy is, the more psychic we are, potentially, the more intuitive we are, and the more we can upgrade our DNA. So that energy is here, it's flowing, and we just have to open up our own self to let it flow through us, because if we're all blocked inside, it flows around us instead of through us. And that's part of learning, opening up to compassion and empathy, because that opens up your own energies to this huge energy, this 75,000-year cycle peak of energy. And when you open up to that energy, one of the things that happens is your DNA starts changing. Your DNA normally has two strings. I'm not an expert. If I say this wrong, I give the general idea. The DNA has two strings out of 12 that are activated. And as more strings get activated, you evolve and you become more present in the energy field. But the DNA is part of the activation. So the more you're in this flow of energy, the more your DNA starts to upgrade. The more there's people around you that you're in a loving space with, the more this DNA upgrades. When you're in service, and, you know, they said, be of service. Real service forces you to open up your energies. You can't truly, really reach for someone and want to help them without your heart opening up, which starts opening yourself up to the cosmic flows. So here's another one here in this Casey book. The world as a whole has lost its ideal, and it makes for disruption and discontent. Many may not have the same idea, but men, all men, may have the same ideal. The social order, the religious order, the economic order must all be for one God. For know that the Lord thy God is one. Now, the idea of one God, in rephrasing that in terms of the way that I see it, is that the entire universe is in fact God. Each of us is a cell or a soul in the body of God. And there's one energy, and that as we tap into that truly, then we start to see that one energy in everything around us. And then, of course, that is, I don't have the quote here, but it's in there, that's where, you know, Jesus said, as you do it to the smallest of these, you do it to me. Or see your neighbor as yourself, treat your neighbor as yourself, because, in fact, he is yourself. So, you see, just you're not doing this out of being good. You're doing it because as you start doing these kinds of actions from the place of view of oneness, the place of oneness, then you start expanding your matrix into the oneness just by that fact. Well, in any case, that's the Ra group speaking through Edgar Cayce, and those of you who read the book probably can see some association between the way they phrase things here. Of course, it's always different from each to each person. It's different through each time period. It's different through the what they call the distortions of that person. So, for example, because Edgar Cayce was a devout fundamentalist Christian to start with, and that was his belief pattern, and David Wilcock is not that, so they can speak differently through David than they can through Cayce. Next week, I keep threatening to do this, and I think I'm going to really commit to do it next week. Next week, I'm going to go through something called St. Catherine of Siena's Dialogues with God. St. Catherine of Siena was a Catholic saint in 1300 that used to go into a local monastery and was channeling, and they wrote down everything she said, and that became part of Catholic literature. And there are a lot of indications that Terry, who channels on this show, was connected with St. Catherine. And those who still study this material know that people look like their past lives, because when you die, your soul carries the DNA to the next life. And this whole St. Catherine thing was, the connection was made where in a channeling with Daphne, I actually asked the question. I said, wasn't Terry ever somebody big in history? Usually, I didn't expect to get an answer. Usually they don't answer, but they said, look up St. Catherine of Siena. So I looked up St. Catherine, and lo and behold, Terry was the spitting image of St. Catherine, and St. Catherine was a channel. And so another Ra person was Rampha and J.Z. Knight. And let's see here. Now, Rampha is kind of a more... How can I say it? It seems like he's part of the Ra group, but he speaks mostly from his own one soul, not as a group energy. And he's got more of a personality. And let's see what's an interesting thing. He talks, though. Here we go. People are migrating in, let's see. Your brothers and sisters are endeavoring to engage you, to get you on with evolution, so that you evolve in knowledge and truth, and continue to swell this consciousness. And they are endeavoring to get you to live your truth, so that it becomes the living word. When you have taken care of your personal business, which frees you to learn, that is when the bridging will occur. You will see wonderful things and experience things you cannot comprehend. These people of mind, he says, these people of mind are not your raiders. I believe he's referring to the Ra group there. They have been your savior. And unfortunately, they have been called messiahs. The intention of these people you called messiahs was simply to provide you with the truth so that you might be illuminated, so that one day you could join them and be with them and not be separate from them. You're separated now because you are separated in ignorance and are still tinged with superstition. Hysterical people are very superstitious. Dogmatic people who consider themselves very religious are looking for something to worship. The ones who are going to have this contact are the rational, the intuitive, the mystical. They are the ones who are making major changes in their lives. They are the ones who are living their truth. They are illuminating it. They are the ones who will sit down with my people. those who will no longer be separate from consciousness, and their God are the ones that are going to harmonize with them and equalize with them. That is the way it has always been. Now, I am sure he's talking about the Ra group there. And this is a book that's not even out, but it's still on Amazon. If anyone wants to look it up, it's called UFOs and the Nature of Reality. And it was in 1991. And what have you learned? That worthiness comes from within, within the entity, and it must be experienced, and it must be experienced according to your laws. Now ask me how important consciousness is. That's how important. These people I have just mentioned to you lived in this level millions of years in the time flow as you know it. They are dead in spirit, meaning they are dead in consciousness. Joshua ben Joseph, which is another name for Jesus, has to look like the picture. And he has to be imagined as the picture looks. The created image of him has to look exactly like that for you to believe. He has to wear the same clothes the artist saw. He must have a brown beard and brown hair, and even though he didn't. Because if he looked any other way, he would be the devil impersonating Jesus. And that's the way your mind works. And that's not necessarily the people on this call, the way that our minds work, but that's the way many in the world think of these things. So, I think it's very interesting, and cross-referencing these things for me and seeing how Ramtha spoke about his people and his group, and reading about how the Ra group describes himself and saying, hey, they must be talking about the same group. And, of course, Edgar Cayce never talked about a group soul. He couldn't, because it was too far out of concept for his Christianity. But the wisdom was the same wisdom. You see, they keep trying to find people and using people to bring this through, to give us the clues and the keys to put it together so that we will look really hard to make the changes in ourselves. If you're going to change yourself, it's not about changing your thinking. It's not about saying, oh, Wynn really speaks well. I like what he says. This has to go far deeper than that. You have to want, at such a high level of intent, a transformation in yourself. Because that desire will cause you to attract the circumstances that will make that change happen. And if you're just casually skipping along life, skimming, and you're not creating that intent, it won't happen. And I hope that some of you listening will participate in the conference calls we're doing, because there's a constant state of information and support on these calls and some of the programs we're putting out into the world. And if you're not subscribed to Light Body, I hope you'll subscribe to Light Body, because there's an email every day. And you know, if you're in this world, you're in a world that hypnotized most of the people. And you would have to assume that to some extent or another, you've been hypnotized as well. And if you want to unhypnotize yourself, you've got to immerse yourself in material, vibrations, people, projects, readings that are beyond the hypnotism. Because otherwise, you'll just stay hypnotized and you'll look at everything from your level of hypnosis. If you're watching a lot of television, you're almost certainly hypnotized. That's something that was in the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, how television is used with an intent by the negative to hypnotize people and keep them compressed and keep them in a reality system that is controllable. And so we have a few minutes left. And we'll start a channeling while we're here on BBS. But I think we'll do what we did last week. And that is So we don't have to stop the channeling when we go off BBS. We will take, you're welcome to call up on the conference line, those of you that want to hear the whole channeling, and get your pencils out. It is 218-936-1100, and the PIN is 375-25-pound. 218-936-1100, and the PIN is 375-25-pound.
To begin recording this conference, press 1. To quit, press star.
Okay, guess what? How's that for my phone going dead at just the right time, right? I'm sitting there saying, okay, we're ready, and my phone turned itself off. I hope it doesn't do this again. Okay?
Wow.
I'm holding on to all the connections. So let's call in the light, and we'll have to cut off of BBS. Again, those of you on BBS, 218-936-1100, and the PIN is 375-25-pound, and you can hear we're going to do a channeling with Ra'an, which is, I think it's Ra'an, you never know, they decide one way or the other. I've been talking to the Ra group, we're talking about the Ra group tonight, so they may just bring in the Ra group, we'll see. And it's 7:50, we're supposed to be off now. But I'll tell you what, you guys that are on PBS, we'll call in the light. You can join us for this and hear the first words of the channeling. And remember, you can call directly and listen to the whole thing, which will probably go for another 10 or 15 minutes. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person listening on PBS, and on our conference call at this moment. And right now, we see ourselves in this flow of energy that radiates from the center of our galaxy through our bodies to the center of the Earth. And we invoke a group consciousness, a blending of all our energies that are in the other realms. And if you shut your eyes, as we do this blending, some of you will actually see the light energy around your third eye and feel a pressure on the top of your head. And we invite those positive group souls, service to others, to join with us and blend with our energies for a protected space during this call. And we are now going to say goodbye to BBS. Thank you for listening. The easiest way to tap into the work I'm doing is to join messageaday.net with no spaces or hyphens. Messageaday.net, and you'll get an email every day from higher sources with my comments in your inbox. And if there's any special events, we'll be announcing on that group. And on that note, let me go back. Good step. You can disconnect us now. Let's go back to Paul and our group energy and our connection with our group souls. And do we have a source present?
Yes, we are present with you today. We are a section of the Elohim.
Okay. Well, in terms of what we were talking about earlier, we were discussing the challenge of helping us and assisting us from your realm, maybe in making the connections down here, so that people even know that that exists. Can you share a little bit about the challenges and how you have attempted to do that in historically speaking?
Yes, we are always available to you. We are a very high frequency, and we have tried numerous times to access the individual's attention in your realm. However, the frequencies in which we reside do not easily translate into your realm, as the frequencies are so very, very high. The individuals generally are not looking in our range of frequency for information or sensation or experience or information. It has been our fondest wish to connect with your realm, and we stand by available at any time for any of your members who wish to access us. We can access you and see your energies.